Well, good evening, everyone. And, you know, as I look across the audience, there isn't too many faces here that I know. And like Paul mentioned, he was one of our customers, but that's been quite a number of years. As I look across. But one thing I am curious, as I look across you, is there anyone else, any of you in here that are also adopted? Raise your hand. Very well. Good. And I'm glad to see that. You know, as I think about that title that I think was put in, I had given that one to, I gave that title to Paul simply because it was kind of a title that was handed to me somewhere else. And so I said, it's probably easier if I just give you that title that has been already handed to me. But you know, as I looked at that, the blessing of being an adopted son, And you know, it's not a number of years ago. If you would have asked me that, I probably wouldn't have. I would have kind of, it was enough to make you almost mad, because if there's one thing, one word that's hated, and that is that word adopted. Who wants to be adopted? We'll talk about that as we get in through the, as we get in a little deeper as to that, why that word is so much hated. And yet there's one thing, as I look at that, you know, there's one thing, and I'm going to share this story right now, is a number of years ago, my wife and I were at a wedding, and we sat across from this old couple, and he asked me where I'm from, and I hated when people asked me that, because it used to be that, I could get defensive too and tell you the same place where you came from your mom, but let me tell you this, that one there, it was my own fault. That man was one, and to this day, I admire that man, because it was my own fault that I took it the way I took it. His question was, are you a local person? And yes, we only lived from where we were at, we only lived probably 2 miles. And I'm sitting there blushing, trying to figure out what I'm going to tell him. I'm adopted, and I came from this, and he goes, about that, oh, that's okay. He goes, I'm adopted too. I'm adopted into the family of God. And that was my own fault. And today, I am glad to be able to tell you here tonight that, you know, I am glad that I'm adopted twice. And once by my parents in Lancaster County, and another time is into the family of God, which that's even better yet. And so, all right, we'll talk about that in just a little bit more. I think before I go there, though, I should show you and explain to you. So my family is not along tonight. And the reason is my wife's family, or her parents, have a 60th wedding anniversary this weekend, and so all her siblings are around, and so it just didn't seem right to try to cancel this out. So if you look here, this is our family, and some of our girls are with, raise your hand, and so if I start to the left is Fonda. Fonda is sitting, raise your hand so they see. That's Fonda, and then Tanya is to the right. I'm going from left to right. And Tanya's to the right, and Sharla is in the back. Fonda is 15, and Tanya is 17, and Sharla is 21. 21, right? And then this one here is Gwen. And this is very interesting, but in our family, we have two sets of birthday twins. So Gwen and Tanya are a set of birthday twins 2 years apart. And then it's Rolanda. Rolanda's the youngest. So we started out with five girls, and then the boys came at the end. And so then if you come to the left, then is Keldon. He is 9 years old. And then the second boy, his name is Kedrick, and he is the one that I'd like you to take a look at a little bit, because he is 6 years old, and imagine yourself, imagine, just look at him and just imagine someone at that age being brought into a strange country. I was just a tad older than that, but in that age category, being taken away and brought into a strange country where you can't speak English, and your parents who adopted you, they can't speak Spanish. And so now, you know, so if you look at him, and then our youngest boy, he is 8 months old. His name is Carlos. And we have actually named him my Spanish name. His middle name is my Spanish name. And I must admit, it took me a long time to get there. I remember my wife wanting to name one of the others that, and I used to tell her, not really. I have no interest in it. So then with this one, his middle name is my Spanish name. And we'll get there. I'll tell you in just a little bit. And I'm going to go off of Screen Connect just for a little bit. I'll put some more pictures up just a little bit to show you as we go in where it all started. I think, though, before we go there, I'd like to begin by just reading a number. I have three Bible verses here that I think it's very important as I look at my own life that I point out some very important verses to you, and I'm just going to. There's one verse here that I think about so often, and that is in Jeremiah. Now, I'm not always using, as I read these verses, I want you to know that I'm not always using the King James Version. And one of them is in Jeremiah, where God said this to Jeremiah: "Before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. And before thou camest forth out of the womb, I sanctified thee." And if you go to one of the other translations, it would simply say, it would put it this way: "Before I formed you, I knew you. And I approved of you as my chosen instrument. Isn't it wonderful that tonight that we have a God who knows everything about us, even before we were born. And another one very similar to that is, and I take this one out of the NIV version of the Bible, is, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, the plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and future." And again, it brings out the thought that God knows us, and He has plans for us. And as I think about this, I think some of you would probably agree with me. As you were growing up, to some of you here that. And one thing I will say this, And before we go too far, as I'm somewhat handicapped because I have never been on the parental side. And so, just so you understand what I'm trying to get to. And that is this, is that, you know, sometimes we children grow up, and maybe even so some of you mothers, you were growing up and you fathers, you know, dreaming of when you would have your own children, and you dreamed of some of you are farmers here, and you dream what you're going to be doing with your sons on the farm or whatever you do. And yet, God had other plans for you. And sometimes those plans, and even in my own life, God had other plans. And yet today, I'm glad that I'm here tonight. And because I'll tell you why in just a little bit. One more verse. And this one here, this verse was on the wall of the children's home. If you saw that picture previously of the New Life and Hope Orphanage, there was a verse on the wall, and that was this verse: "When my father and mother forsake me," and this is taken from Psalm 27, verse 10. "When my father and mother forsake me, then the Lord will take me up, or simply take care of me." And if you read Amplified Bible, and this is, I just looked at this just yesterday. I noticed this in the Amplified Bible that it reads like this: "Although my father and mother have abandoned me, yet the Lord adopted me as his child." I often wondered why David wrote this. You know, because it really doesn't go with the rest of the passage in Psalm 27. And yet, I think what David was saying is this, that my parents were my protector for a time, but the Lord has been my protector always. And that is so true. More recently, this verse was taken off the wall of the home because it's now being used as a school for deaf children. And today, the home in El Salvador is running again. It is going, except that it is going under the name as Strong Towers Home. And this is the interesting thing. The director of it, his name is Misael. And Misael and myself were boys together at the other orphanage. And so it's kind of, it's exciting when I am talking to him, and how his vision to get that home going again has become real. One thing they do, and that is they process coffee. And if I am not mistaken, this is what my friend just told me this on Thursday night, that I think the coffee that you are drinking here is a Strong Towers coffee. All right, let's get started here into the story. I'm going to begin by just reading just a short paragraph that was back at this school, at the end of this school term, or this school. There was a student that was asked to do an assignment for an English class, and she sent me a message wondering if she could do it on my life. And I wasn't, at first I wasn't real keen on that idea, but I did agree to it. But I told her this, that understand this, that it doesn't matter what you It doesn't, whatever you write, we must somewhere in the end, God needs the glory. Because it is Him who brought these men into my life to help me work through these struggles. And I said, so in the end, the only way I would agree to something like that is it must end with that. And so I'm just going to read a paragraph here that she wrote, but I just kind of slightly changed it. I did a slight change, but I think you'll get the point. So, in the solitude of a semi-dark room sat a little girl and a boy, listening to the quiet murmur of the voices on the other side of the wall. It really wasn't unusual for these children to be put in a room together while their mother had men visiting her. And that is where my story begins. So I was born in the country of El Salvador, and El Salvador is in Central America. It's bordered on the northeast of Honduras, and on the northwest by Guatemala, and then of course on the south of it is the Pacific Ocean. And as a boy, we had a lot of fun going to the ocean, and of course the capital is San Salvador, and and so I was born in August 2, 1977. And there's one thing that I think about is this, is that I don't have the name of the town with me. My paperwork would show the name of the town where I was born. But my memory living with my mother is somewhat vague. And there is a side of it that I'm glad it is. Because there's one thing I remember, and that is she had many men visiting her, and there were times, there was quite a number of times when my sister, her name was Christina, my sister and I were put into another room, and there we sat. Sometimes we stood, while mother had a visitor. On the other side, and so sometimes I wonder if I was born out of wedlock, and really I don't really want to know if that is true, and sometimes often wonder if there's any half siblings and often wonder too today, whatever became of my sister. She was older than me, of course, and so maybe as I went on there, the reason I say that sometimes I wonder if I was born out of wedlock, and that is the reason is this. When my parents adopted me, they also adopted another boy from there, and he was younger, and let me pull this. I want to show you a picture of my parents. Now this is an old photo, so this is my parents when they came down, and they also adopted him. Now there's questions what his relationship is to me. And the reason is that when my parents went to start the adoption process, in the country, it showed that he never existed. And so the home administrator, and some of you may know him, it's Daniel Lapp. I'm talking Daniel Lapp, he's from Mine Road, and so they took him to a doctor who somewhat gave about what age he thought he was, and And the local judge who was doing the who was working through the adoption assigned a birth date for him. And really, and we'll talk about it later, but it actually made him very bitter when he realized that when he found that out. So this is the home. And again, this is an old picture. Our girls were just in El Salvador here back in February, and they came home with this picture. What I want you to know, though, this home, I was sitting outside with my mother one day when a vehicle drove in, and soon I was loaded into that vehicle, I think it was Daniel Lapp recently reminded me, wondered if I remember what the question was that they asked me, and I said that's one thing I have never forgotten is if I had anything to eat that day. And so I think you can kind of see, and to this day I'm glad that, you know, that I'm spared from all of that. And so I was put in this vehicle and brought to this home, and you know, sometimes I've already been asked if I ever missed leaving from that time and going to the home. And I've often said I have very vague, very, very vague memories of my life with my mother, but I have good memories of being at the home. We were family. And I think the reason is that there was more children there, and there was things to do. There we had a lot. If you can picture this place, we're driving in the lane. This lane. It's a very long lane. Let's drive in the lane. We're driving in the lane, and to our right is there was a sugarcane field. To our right, that's to our right, and it was a lot of fun when it was time to harvest that, because as boys we would all run over to the fence and when they were harvesting that, and the man that farmed that, he knew what we wanted. We wanted a piece of that sugar cane. And so he would get his machete out there and chop us a nice sized piece, and we would chew on that. And oh, it was so good. And then you went around. Okay, I'm going to come back to this picture after a bit. So, these were some of the boys that were there. If the one to the top, up to the top is, that is Misael. And Misael was one that, he was at the home simply because his mother could not take care of him. He was there, and if you go on to right beside him, to the right of him, that is Reuben Putt. He was Antonio in his, and he lives somewhere in Lancaster County. That's him. And then to the right of him is that, I'm going from left to right. To the right is that is John Yoder. Do any of you know John Yoder? Any of you know John Yoder? John Yoder he was adopted by David Yoder. David Yoder was our house dad. He and I'll show you a picture in just a little bit. They were our house dad. And then to the right, so John lives in Kansas. He's married and has probably three or four children. They live in Hutchinson, Kansas. And then to the right of that, that is That boy's name is, his name is Julio. And Julio was probably the oldest one of our age boys group. He was the oldest one. And let me tell you this, he was, I sometimes say he liked to think he was pretty tough. But I think now looking back, he was just being a normal boy. And it didn't matter what we did. He always had to have the best, and if we had a good bike, he had to have it. And that was Julio. And I have a story about him. I'll have a story here about him after a bit. And then if you go to the far right, that is actually me to the far right. And then I'm going from left to right to my right. Then that is Victor. Victor is married and he lives in Hagerstown, Maryland. I think his name is now Ivan Hostetter. I've talked to him, but it's been quite a number of years since I have talked to him. He had a sister, Rosita, and they were both adopted by a family in Hagerstown, Maryland. And then going on to the right, his name is Norniso. Now, he is actually a brother to John Yoder. And John's name never changed. He was Juan, and he's still that. And that is that. And then I am not sure who those next two boys are. That is one that I am very, very vague about. Who they are, but then to the right of that is my brother. Now again, this is the one that my parents would have adopted him at the same time, and his name is Jonathan, and he is married and lives in Lancaster, and I think they have probably eight children or seven or eight. Oh, okay, five. I thought it was more than that. All right. Let me see once. Oh, yes. Now, where is he? Okay. I'm sorry. I missed the boy. Wait, right beside Misael is another one. You see the little boy in the back there? That's my friend. And we are friends even today. We were friends from the time we grew up. Him and I and Victor. Now, we were the closest in age, and we were friends. But his name is Avell, and Avell is he and Julio were never adopted, and they are still in El Salvador. Avell is actually a minister in one of those in one of the churches there. But Avell, he and Julio are brothers, but they were very, very different in personalities. Avell was, and he hasn't changed today yet. He's just the nicest man you could be around, and he was back then when we were boys. He was just the nicest fella to be around, and even Misael was he's still just a very nice man, and this is Avell. But there's one thing: it's this lady here. This lady here was one of the caretakers at the home, and this is Avell now. This is him now at his age. So you can kind of, and that is his family. He has two daughters. And then, of course, these are our three girls that were in there. And the lady was at the, she was one of the caregivers at the home. And so, you know, as a boy, I look at it that coming through the home, that life was good. And we had a lot of fun there. If you can picture with me the home, like I said, we in this long lane, went around the house, and then there was a church, and it went on around, and there was a school. So everything was right there. And we just had a lot of fun. In fact, I learned to swim But being with all those big boys there, why, by the time I was probably 5 years old, I could swim. And coming to the States one time, my dad, he thought he should teach me how to swim. And so, okay, he told me, he said, we're going to go to a pond. And he said, it's time I teach you to swim. And I'm like, swim? Well, I know how to swim. And he thought he should be along. And I jumped right in there and started swimming. Oh, he said, you know how to swim. Well, I knew that from learning from being around these big boys. Why, they soon taught us. And the reason is if you went on around the home, if you went on, let me see here. I have a photo of that. Yes. So if you went on out through, now mind you, our closest neighbor to that home was probably a mile away. That good. I asked somebody recently if that really is so, and I should ask the Bell whether that is so. I said, I have vague memories whether I know where I can almost walk to. I said, I could walk to that house now if I'd be there. And he goes, yes, it's pretty far out to the closest neighbor. We went out and out past there, and he would bring you to the river. We would go down there pretty much regularly. Why, the boys would have their set time to go to the river, and then the girls would also have their set time to go to the river. And I'm not sure this one here. This picture is very, very vague that we're all together here down by the river, because that was very, very unusual. And so, of course, during that time, David and Susanna Yoder were the house parents. And the way that was set up was as you walked into the home, why the main living area, let's pull that up. I'm going to pull up one of the girls' more recent photos. All right, so if you look in the bottom. In the bottom area, that. And actually, by the way, this home has not changed since hardly changed. They have hardly done anything since I was a boy. So if you look at the bottom, why, we boys would sleep in the bottom here. That's where we slept. The second floor was the upper level was for the house parents. That was their quarters. But we had a lot of fun, and so we had it made. Christmas time came, well, we would always look forward to Christmas time, because I want to tell you this, and I know it's kind of funny that, but that's really where I learned to like raisins, is because for Christmas, we'd get a small box of raisins for Christmas, they soon disappeared. It was almost like eating candy, and we'd get that for Christmas, and so we had a lot of good times. Now, around the 1980s, it brought some challenges to El Salvador. Anybody old enough here, older than me, that would know what I'm talking about? Anybody older than 47? Want to take a guess?
Was there a revolution?
Okay, all right. The 1980s brought the guerrilla movement, the civil war within that country. And you know, To about a five-year-old boy, I'm gonna tell you here, and I want you to think what it was producing. Around that time, why we soon had the guerrillas and so the guerrilla movement started, understand, we're back in, there's no cell phones. This was no cell phones, and there's no hardly any communication, and the closest neighbor is about a mile away. What do you think that's going to do when to a young boy, when this is with the windows wide open and all of a sudden someone is sticking their heads inside that window, wanting to come in, but they want everybody to be in that. They would escort everybody to a room, into that room, and shut the doors, and it was guarded. What do you think that's doing to somebody? And in fact, this is, there oftentimes it was just one set of house parents and a couple workers, maybe three, that are trying to tend about probably a dozen children. And you know, we soon got used to that. We got used to it. We got used to it because when we knew the gorillas would come, when we knew that they're there, the first thing you would do is that you would grab all your clothing and try to stuff it underneath the bed so that at least you would have your pair of shoes for the next. You might not have, your pair of shoes might leave on you. And one night, while we were doing that, well, here he was, here he was sticking here. We knew they were there. They had already knocked. They were there. And while we were all jumping, trying to, of course, you know, there boys are trying to get your shoes underneath the bed and everything else. Why, here, he was watching. One of the men was watching us. He had his head sticking in the window. He's seen everything we did. And so he seen that. But one night they came. But that night our dogs were somewhat. And we had there was a number of dogs around there, and they were mutts. But that night the dogs were very, very uneasy about these men, that about these gorillas, and they came. So the commander said, "All right, somebody has to come out. Somebody has to go out and watch those dogs." But he didn't want the big boys to do it. He wanted the little boys to go out and do that. What are we to do that? David Yoder, he was an amazing man. When I think about that, you know, he put his arms around us and he said, you know, yeah, God will take care of you. And he did. And he did. Think about this 5-year-old boy, a couple 5-year-old boys, and we're standing out there in the dark and we're trying to guard these dogs. We're watching these dogs and we went out there and we watched those dogs while they were in there, and sometimes when I think back to that I can hardly believe we actually did it. But I want you to think about that. What is that producing to a young boy? What's that producing in him? When we came back in, like I said, there's Julio. He liked to think himself pretty tough. His first question was, "Were you scared?" Now, why would you ask that question? You know, that's a stupid question to really ask. But, you know, as a 5-year-old boy, I knew what he thought. I knew what he thought of me. And if I would have said, "Yeah, I was," he probably would have called me a real wimp. And so I said, "No, I wasn't." And his brother Avell was out too, and he right away said, "I was scared." He said, that made me feel better. And I said, "Yeah, I was really," because my heart was pounding over that time. And really, the truth of it is that in the end, God did take care of us, because when we were standing out by the schoolhouse, which that's a distance from that, there was also gorillas outside. And so God did take care of us that night. But I want you to know this, is that whole time along, it was starting to produce fear within me, a fear that I had to get help to get to work that out. So the gorillas were coming and they would come and finally, it got so bad that it was starting to get pretty bad. In fact, even my parents would say that my mom couldn't wait to get out of there because of how bad it was. but we had to move away from there. it was starting to get that bad that we actually had to move away. And, you know, as a boy, when I think about that, yeah, it really looked exciting that we're moving. And so we moved to a church camp. We moved to a church camp. Well, where it was a bunch of little cabins. And so, and you know, there again, the fear came on there. And so we boys, of course, myself, Avell and Victor, and myself, well, we were in a cabin together. And so we all slept on the same bed because of that. We weren't, you know, will they come? Will these gorillas come? And I recently asked Avell and Misael, and Misael was another boy there. I asked him how that, and they all say that, the gorillas did have it affected them throughout the year, took them a while to work through that process. And then it got so bad that we moved, and we lived at this church camp for a while they were trying to find another house. And in the end, we moved to the city. We moved to the city. And it really wasn't a good thing for the bigger boys. Now, some of them have more vivid memories of how that, because on either side of us, on either side of the home in the city was a bar on each side. And so nights and weekends especially got really bad. You could the music and everything else. And in fact, there was always people around there. It really wasn't a good place to live. But it was safer. It really was safer. But here's the thing is, imagine taking children, trying to run a home in the city. There was nothing to do. There was nothing to do. We lived in the city there because when we lived out in the country, there was all kinds of things to do in the country. We could go out there and I should show you this picture. This one here still impresses me. If you look at that big tree there, that big tree was when we were boys. We used to like to go out there and that thing would produce mangoes. We'd go out there and we used to like to throw rocks up to there and knock the fruit out. And this is how many years later, and that tree is still standing and is still producing fruit. One time we weren't supposed to be out there. We were supposed to be doing something, and we were climbing around that tree, and somehow a branch broke, and of course I got the lucky end of it. It came down right on top of me, and we soon learned that because we weren't supposed to be there. We had been given some jobs to do, and we were down there instead. One thing I will say is, and that's the picture I was trying to grab, is that when we were living there, there was one boy. He was one of the adult. He was one of the big boys that was there. And one night when the gorillas came, he really was of age, almost too old to be there. But when they came, he went with them. He really thought it would be cool to be a gorilla. And so one night when they were there, he went with them. And it soon wasn't long till he was back, wondering if he could come back to the home. And of course they didn't let him do that. But now, let's keep moving here. I am running out of time here. And so let's keep moving. I began by saying that who wishes to be adopted? And you know, in my years at the home, I had seen many children leaving coming. I'd seen some coming and also some leaving. I remember one incident on the one girl, especially who when her time was to leave, and you know, like 2 weeks prior to that, why, you know, oh, it was, she was just very brokenhearted, and she just cried and cried, and you know, and I remember David Yoder telling us, you know, he basically, you know, just try to be kind to her, and you know, as a young boy, I often wondered, why wouldn't you want to be adopted? Why, you know, and part of the reason was is that sometimes some of these parents would send gifts down to their children, and so the rest of us would see these gifts that the children got, and so let me pull this. If you see that picture there, that was my parents brought that down for me. And so, you know, we would see the other children getting them. And so why wouldn't you want to be adopted? Why wouldn't you want to? And then you get this free ride. You get a plane ride into the States. And I had seen that over and over. And I used to wonder why. Why are these children, some that, you know, they could hold it till it was time to get, till it was time to be separated, and then it was all, and it was over. And I saw that over and over, and I wondered why. Well, you know what? When it was my turn, I soon understood why. And I want to tell you this, is that probably a couple weeks before, when it was my turn, when I realized, and it sounded, I was excited about it, but as the time got closer, I started struggling with upset stomach, and that was a daily thing. It was an everyday thing. Evenings it would come, and it went almost right up until I left. And then there again, I soon realized that and so when our turn came, when my turn came, my parents, to make this work, my parents had to come down, had to come to El Salvador to do some of the paperwork. And of course, my parents would say that one thing that was required is that they had to drive out to where I was born and try finding either my parents or else a relative to sign the paperwork so that they could get the adoption through. And so they drove out, and they were Daniel Lapp, he would stop every now and then, and he would ask them, and finally they met a man come. He was walking up the street, they stopped, and they asked him if they know of anyone who's related to me, and yep, he said, he's my uncle. And so, was it true? What was it true or not? But he signed the paperwork, and it worked. And you know, I think that was, and I want you to know this, that was God, or else I wouldn't be here. And because it worked, the judge accepted that signature, and you know, my parents brought me up, and I thought, yeah, this is gonna be pretty cool because I can live in the States, and on Sunday I'll be back. On Sunday I'll be back with my friends there at the home, and I can tell them that everything about what I did that week. And well, guess what? I was in for a surprise because I left El Salvador in February of 1984. Is when I left and came to the States, and of course I was in the winter time, and. You know, we really, because, first of all, I couldn't speak English, and my parents couldn't speak Spanish. And so it was one of those things that, I need to soon bring this. How much more time will you give me? Okay, I'll try to. So my parents occasionally would call Daniel Lapp and say, you know, what does he want? What does he need? And so Daniel would get on the phone and we'd go at it in Spanish, and then he'd get back and he's wondering about this. And so, all right, now we can get this. Well, this is the thing is, in order to be in school that year yet, I had to learn English. And I want to tell you this, and that is that throughout my life school years, I hated school. And even it took me a long time. And I must admit, I struggled with it up until a number, probably even over the years, especially with the one teacher. This is even after, in the end, I must admit, I want you to know this. And I think, and this is probably the important, I think as one of you as adopted parents, one thing is that sometimes your child might need somebody else to help them work through struggles. Remember, I had that fear to work through, and then I had also had anger, and because of the rejection and all that, I had to work through that. And it took me a long time to work, especially with that one teacher, that if I would meet her, I would probably go walking by her. And if she would call my name, I'd go walking past like I never knew she was there. And it took me a long time to accept that teacher because of school. And when I got out of school, I made the comment to my parents that understand one thing, I will never set foot at that school again. Never. And my dad, he took it like it's just a bunch of hot air blowing out. But really, it went. There was one girl from church who was teaching there. And when she was explaining the room that she was in, and this probably went 10 years. And she was saying about this room she's in. And I said, hey, we were in that room with fourth grade. In fourth grade, I was in that room. And she wanted us to come see it. And so we did. And that was probably in 10 years is probably when I finally stepped back into that school. Now I can go by there. And yet, I must admit, there was this year when they closed our school down and all the children had to, if it was a decision, either you're going to go to that school or else, it set my heart for a beat again. One, because am I going to give in and send my children to that school? But we decided to go elsewhere. And so I want you to know this, and I'd like to just share this, that I am glad tonight that there was men who, I remember talking to a friend, and he's not living anymore, and he told me one time, you got problems that you have to work through, and I told him, I know, but I said, I don't know what to do about it, he really helped me. And then in the end, I must admit, I have gone through some counseling and to help me work through, because that fear, I want to tell you this, working through that because of the gorillas was a real thing to work through that fear. And some of that would come up just simply by seeing a police incident. It would strike that fear right back into me. And it's real, and I had to work through it. And today I think I can tell you that. I must admit, maybe about a year ago there was an incident, and I felt that coming right back. And I must admit, it took me again. I had to work through that one with somebody to try to get that back out. And this is the other thing is that it also in accepting my adopted parents, that was probably a hard thing to work through, is accepting them. If it's hard for someone who has been adopted to think about her being my mom or him being my dad, because he really isn't. He's not my dad. And it took me a long time to get to that place to call them mom and dad. Because, deep down in, and even now, sometimes when it comes to Mother's Day and some of those, we picking out a gift for mom, it can come back. She's not really my mom. those are real. They're real. And I thank God that I was able to work through that. But I'm just telling you here that if your child might need some mentoring, be okay with that. Don't try to do it on your own. Because I don't know what, I must admit, if my father would have tried that on me, I probably would have made me pretty angry, pretty mad at him. But I'm glad that there were these men that were willing to take an interest in me. I need to close, but I want to tell you this. I'm glad to be here with you tonight, and I'm glad that I have been spared of the wickedness that my mother was in, and I'm glad that I have been spared from that. All right, thank you for your attention.
What was your middle name?
Oh, I am so sorry. All right, so. There he is. So my name, my Spanish name was Walter Orlando. And you know, this is another thing, is in thinking about names. I often wonder why my parents changed my name. I used to think, when they started calling me Joel, why would they change? Well, that's not what I was named at. My name is Orlando. Why wouldn't you call me that? And in fact, this is the interesting thing, but when I talk to these men in El Salvador, I say sometimes if I ever go back, I'm going to have to go back and use my Spanish name, because that's all they know me as. They still call me Orlando, and then it kind of confused it. For the first time we went to West Haven, it threw some of those men off, because Misael was there and we were talking, and he kept referring to me as Orlando, and I would answer him in that, and then some of these other men would ask me what my name is, and I'd tell them it's Joel. And, well, now what is your name? It took them a while. They were confused what my name was, because they were there that night and they heard me being called two names. And yet looking back, I'm glad that my name is Joel. And I want to tell you this, and this is because this was one of my. A man told me this that my father would have told him in his. And one time he shared some of his, my parents, what they felt they were struggling with, and he shared them with him. And I sat down with him, and he told me some of those things, and it really made me mad. And then the next time I sat down with him, he told me, I really made you mad the last time, didn't you? And I said, well, it was okay, but I'm saying it's okay. But I said, if my parents had those things, why didn't they talk to me about them? And he said, that's because they knew that you're going to get mad. That you can talk to me better, and we can be friends and that. And he was right. He was right. It would have made tension between my parents and I had my parents told me what they told him. And then he went on to tell me that there's one thing my parents. So when I came up, my parents scheduled. We had all these doctor appointments to go to, and my parents thought it'd be a good thing to take me to a doctor that talks Spanish, so that we can. If there's anything, I can tell them in Spanish. And by that time I was already knowing I could pretty much communicate in English, and so my parents went to the doctor, and the doctor rattled off in Spanish the questions, and I would answer in English. And finally, the doctor told my parents, "You may as well just take him to your regular doctor, because he doesn't want to be Spanish; he wants to be English." And so, you get the point. All right, thank you.